Hello, everyone. Welcome to Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. Season three continues apace. It is now the month of April, which is my birthday month, as I referenced in the VHS video that you have potentially watched, or maybe you can watch after you've listened into this one. I'm John McDonald. I am an American gay playwright, and I'm here again with my lovely co-host, Magnus. Hello, Magnus.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing fine today. My neighbors have decided we're going to live in a construction zone, but we're almost done with winter, almost into spring, which is a good time of year because it's not yet the heat death of summer, but soon enough it will be. Huzzah.
Indeed. We're in that lovely little golden period at the second.
It's true. Today we are going to talk about one of my favorite films from Touchstone. And Touchstone, of course, is the Walt Disney quote unquote grown-up imprint. You can't see, but I'm making air quotes for everyone listening to this as a podcast. And Touchstone, of course, brought us Sister Act in 92, and then a year after they brought us Sister Act in 93. Much like the Addams Family, this was a two-film franchise until more come down the pipe. Unlike the Addams Family franchise, we did not get an animated cartoon out of this, which seems weird because I feel like the Sister Act franchise would have made a great animated cartoon. They did it with the Addams Family, but they didn't do it with Whoopi Goldberg, and who knows why.
I've got a firm visual in my head of what it could look like, a very Disney-esque sort of almost like very nice old style vintage Disney, like you've got with 101 Dalmatians and such. Yeah, I can actually fully imagine that. So you're right, it's slightly strange, but maybe just never they didn't think it would translate well
I'm
for.
not sure. It's possible. I mean, of course, Mary Wicks did pass away. Sister Mary Lazarus was her last film role, which is a great film role to go out on. But Whoopi had always been demure about Sister Act 3, so maybe that kept it from happening. But I can think of the time period of that early to mid 90s, like Louie Anderson and Howie Mandel both had cartoons at that time. So there's no reason why Whoopi Goldberg couldn't have had a cartoon. HBO, I think, was doing the Never After African American version of Fairy Tales at that point. I think that's Never After, what if I remember correctly. So I don't know why, but the Sister Act franchise seems rife, especially in a school setting for a fabulous choir sort of proto glee thing. So yeah, so we're talking about Sister Act 2 today. We are back in the habit, as is the tagline for the movie, and you can't see it, but I have kicked my leg out and I am wearing fantastic red heels, a la Whoopi Goldberg in the Sister Act 2 promo image.
Oh yes. So I'm getting a very good look at it as we speak. So many sequins, so much sparkle. Very Las Vegas, one could say.
And I do look great in heels. I do love the story too. I love that Dolores Van Cartier's version of Making It Big is a residency in Vegas, which I guess is not bad because you do get paid a lot, but I would argue that's not as big as you could go. God bless her, Whoopi Goldberg was cast and lied about being able to sing. So her playing Dolores Van Cartier slash Sister Mary Clarence is hilarious for a number of reasons, that among them, so.
So it almost feels like there's a natural progression from the first film into the plot of the second film. Like it doesn't feel forced at all. Like sometimes they struggled with sequels to find the right sort of story to tell. Sister Act 2 definitely feels like one of those, though, that it's a very natural, here's chapter 2 of what they're getting up to, sort of thing.
Yes, I wish Roger Ebert had agreed with you, because almost everyone that criticized this movie back in 93 thought that it was very forced and the sequel didn't live up to the original. This movie had the same thing happened as what happened to, like, say, MASH, is people fell in love with it in syndication. It didn't make as money as the first Sister Act movie, but once people saw it on TV, people fell in love with it and it became an institution. It's actually heralded as being the start of a lot of careers and being the inspiration for a lot of careers for people that are ubiquitous in our society. It also helped that Jennifer Love Hewitt and Lauryn Hill broke out because of this film. And of course, Jennifer Love Hewitt became such a big star in the 90s, and I would argue is still a big star. And of course, Cheryl Lee Ralph is in this, which is great. Erica Campbell from Mary Mary is in this movie. Alana Ubach is in this movie. Of course, Kathy Najimy reprises her role. So what's interesting about this is that even though it was not considered quote unquote successful, its legacy has much outlived its 18% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I definitely don't think this movie deserves 18%. This movie is much higher than an 18% rating. Of the movies that were done in Touchstone Pictures that year, the only movie that is comparable to it in its time is What's Love Got to Do with It, which is the Tina Turner biopic. But 93 was also the year Nightmare Before Christmas came out, and people didn't like that movie either when it first came out. It had to find its audience, and I think that's something that we're going to see less and less of as streaming services kind of disrupt this idea of being able to find your audience and becoming a cult hit that allows people to find it and treasure it. Like a film like Drop Dead Gorgeous wouldn't work today because people would see it once and then they would never like watch it again. Drop Dead Gorgeous and Miss Congeniality and films like that work now in perpetuity because people get to discover them year to year. I think Sister Act 2 is a bit like that.
I know what you mean. I don't want to go too far into this because this is a whole other discussion that I could very easily get lost down the rabbit hole of. But I agree with the comment regarding streaming. Netflix it has become very much a graveyard of 1 to 2 season failed projects at this point. You don't have to go too far back below the surface to find those ideas. And that's a massive shame. The potential, I like beloved classics that could have come from it if they'd given these shows a chance to find their audiences. But it's just all about the instant success now. And that's sadly that it, if we have a look at the fact that Sister Act 2's became retroactively well loved after its release. It's a clear example of the fact that you have to give some things time to, as you say, find their audience. I won't go far too far into it because I'll just grow in despair at the lack of artistic
No,
value that's
see,
going on there.
I can give you literally from the Wikipedia page a name of at least 10 current celebrities that were heavily influenced in beginning their careers in singing or acting by this film that have openly talked about how important this film specifically or the soundtrack was to them. So, Katy Perry is on this list. Harry Styles is on this list. I was so astonished by this list. Janelle Monáe cited Lauryn Hill and this film as the reason she thought about moving into acting as well. Kobe Kayat, whose name I can never pronounce correctly, so I apologize for that. Hillary Scott of Lady Antebellum, which is now Lady A. Lecrae. The TV show Glee owes itself kind of a little bit to this movie. It's in the vein of I don't think movies like Joyful Noise would have gotten made without Sister Act 2 back in the habit. Harry Styles references Ryan Tobey, who is the countertenor Amal, I think is his name, who is the countertenor that sings "Oh Happy Day." Harry Styles literally would not have pursued music, and so nobody who loves One Direction would have had One Direction without Ryan Doby singing "Oh Happy Day." Jennifer Hudson, of course, quite famously dressed up as Sister Mary Clarence during her talk show, and that was Goldberg was an inspiration for her to pursue her career in music, partially because of this. Lizzo has paid tribute to it. Whoopi Goldberg, when she was on Broad City, referenced this, which is partially why she started considering Sister Act 3 all over again. This is one of those films where, because it was like a safe thing for people to listen to, so like Katy Perry said the only secular music she was allowed to listen to specifically was the soundtrack because it had religious theming. But this movie is not necessarily about religion. It has like the window dressing of being Catholic, and Catholics love the Sister Act franchise because it's quote unquote the fun version of Catholicism, I think someone said once. But really, this is a film specifically, even more than the first one, about found family, about community, and about maturity. It works really well in a way that a syndicated TV show set in high school, like Saved by the Bell, doesn't work. The reference to Letters from a Young Poet by Rilke that Dolores Van Cartier gives to Rita, who is the character that she sees herself in the most and is the Lauryn Hill character, is a really deep and meaningful exchange between a mentor and a mentee. And it only works because we have Dolores from Sister Act moving into Dolores from Sister Act 2. The movies cannot be independent of each other. In fact, when they have re-releases on DVD, they release them together. So, like, the last release was a Blu-ray DVD that was both of them with all the bonus features all together. This is, along with Kirk Franklin, here's my favorite fun fact. Along with Kirk Franklin, this is considered kind of how New Gospel got involved with like R&B and hip hop. But more importantly, this movie is responsible for 30 church choirs opening in Japan, apparently. Like not doing it because of the Christian element of it. Like they weren't opening up choirs and churches. They were doing it literally because they loved singing. And so they talk about wanting to sing just like the nuns. And so it's an interesting way to talk about how people form community because of little film, quote unquote, little films like this. It became such a big to-do that in countries they divorce the religious element from it, but they keep the community element of it and they keep the joy element of it. And I can see why, because it's fun. The film is fun, and it's one of those things where when people say, we have to make serious art, I'm like, Sister Act 2 is serious, but you can do it in a fun way. It doesn't have to be serious where it drags you down into the nothings, you know?
And makes you end up being all nice and somber and with stiff upper lip and what have you.
Yes. And of course, you're British, so you know all the things about stiff upper lips and whatnot. That's
Yes,
not something we do in America.
I know all about making dry and very serious art over here. But no, you're completely right, that you can bring across powerful messaging without needing to make it very somber and such. And that's what Sister Act 2 does perfectly to a T. And I think the messages that it brings across about believing in like the potential of young, well, pretty much anyone, trying to help people find their way, being altruistic and such. And trying to do some good. Those are powerful messages that speak across all cultures and societies. So you can kind of understand why the Catholic nun thing pretty much is just, it's the set piece. It's the reason that they've brought her in to help save this class and by extension help save the school. Your typical sort of high school plot. Oh no, the school's closing down. We have to find a way to save it.
They do make
That's
it the school that Dolores Van Cartier went to in
funny.
the like prologue of the first film. So it's supposed to be the same school, though I'm pretty sure 90% that it clearly does not look anything similar to the school. But
So
they make it so she's an alumni basically saving her school by helping them to fundraise. If you really want to take the religious element out of it, she's basically the booster club for this organization.
Pretty much indeed. Oh my goodness. It's you can almost actually just look at it like a high school drama film, you know, just with the Glee Club element before Glee became massively popularized and such.
True. And Glee
And
never
such.
did anything from this movie, which I always found very fascinating, is that they definitely like they stole a whole bunch of pop and indie stuff, but they couldn't be bothered to try and grab Sister Act 2. I guess Fox and Disney weren't always in love with each other, so that's probably what that was about.
Yes.
The interesting thing too is that the guy that directed this film, who was kind of well known for doing TV. The guy that directed this film, Bill Duke, also directed a movie earlier in the year for Touchstone Pictures, The Cemetery Club, which starred Olympia Dukakis and Ellen Burstyn. I don't think anybody ever saw. But so this was his second directing project with Touchstone. So like he was a pretty known quantity around Hollywood at the time. The story is a pretty known story. It's based sort of on an actual high school choir instructor by the name of Ira Stevenson. It's very loosely inspired. So it has that how do you teach element to it. It's interesting too because Dolores never really gives. There's some moments to it in the first film where she's teaching nuns that already kind of know how to sing, how to do music, but there's no like, not everyone can be a teacher. The fact that she just seamlessly finds a way to integrate in this community is interesting because this is a real community that they painted. This is a community with real struggles. Like, I don't actually really blame Rita's mom for being skeptical about her daughter wanting to be a musician. Like the whole subplot of this community is struggling, not just the school, is I think really an important takeaway from this movie. This is a fun movie, but the movie is set in a very real question of like, how do the arts survive in a world where everyone is scrounging? The second male lead, who's not the countertenor, his concern is like, hey, I have this job at night I have to do so my family survives. So I have to sleep through class sometimes. You know, the consideration of can we form a choir is not can we sing. There is some of that embarrassment. That's what Oh Happy Day is about. But the film itself is about not rising above your circumstances, but not rising above in a way where you don't, you know, consider your circumstances. Their whole thing about the song at the end, their version of Joyful, Joyful is because it's about them kind of bringing their community into a place where it's an older community where it's like there's a respectability thing of how you do things and how they've always been done and what they bring in and why I think this resonates and gets redone every few years with like a new group doing their version of the YouTube video for the medleys from this is it resonates because it's like how do we take the message and make it our own? How do we internalize this? If you take away the Christianity element of it, except for the fact that some of them are very like dignified Christian hymns in a way, you could still get the same message across if it was set in a public school that just didn't have the funding. Because the inner city issues they have of people just trying to survive is real. It's a real thing. Like they dress it up, but it's like a real issue. Like having an administrator come in and being like, your school would make more money as a parking lot is a real thing that communities face. In one community right now, they're cutting library hours because they feel like the funding isn't there and having nothing is actually going to cost them less than having something there. And it's like it's a real thing. Like an administrator being like, we'll close down the school and make a parking lot, you know, what you gonna do? You don't have the money, is a real thing. And it's a real plot point in this very real film that I feel like people, when they watch it, probably get a little struck by, because again, it the window dressing of music is so strong, but it is like this is a film about the struggle. It really is about what it looks like to live in an inner city. You know, the first film felt a little shamey in a little ways, where in the second film it really does embrace the warts of kind of this inner shitty life.
Yes. The thing is, this film was released, how long ago was it now? It was
1993. Everyone do that
99.
math in your head for how old you were when this movie was released, and then think, oh my God, how old am I now? Just think, what year anniversary is this movie on currently? It's higher than you want it to be, and it's real.
So the thing is that the reason I bring up the age and such, it's just very telling of the fact that the struggles that they're showing in the film that are quite understandable. It's also like that there's a certain element of timelessness to it, like the struggle to make ends meet, the concerns of Rita's mum, like her partner, like passed away, like chasing fame himself and such, and she's scared of her daughter going down such a path as well, which is quite a reasonable like fear to understand and such. All of these things have the fact is, even though it was released so long ago, at the same time, you totally get it, and they're very real things that are happening in and now in this moment. And so again, like it almost feels like we keep coming back to this point of the fact is it very much Christian theme set dressing over what really does come down to a very powerful comedy drama about inner city issues and about kids worried about being part of like a drama club that might affect their street cred and such, and like entering into, as you're saying, like with the competition, such as singing hymns from a, you know, a different tradition, a different community, but blending their own together, do in a way doing something, taking the courage to do something new and original within an established setting, and you know it. If this is like real life story, it doesn't always work out. So you can understand their hesitation towards doing that.
Yeah.
Also, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say one thing interesting about using the sort of very heavy-handed religious set dressing, using actual nun garment and stuff like that, tad on to your point, that does kind of get it away. It's shorthand. Like when you see what a nun looks like, you already kind of know. You have in your mind what you think of as a nun, even if Sister Act is the only thing you know about nuns. And so it really actually, the window dressing allows for the shorthand to happen. And the big fancy term iconography, which is where you see something and you immediately know kind of what the symbolism is in your head, The iconography allows the story to get out of the way. I do not think it's a mistake that the women go to the retirement center and sing Ball of Confusion. I don't think that was a misplaced song, even though it is a little cringy because it's through the eyes of the students. They're doing the best they can, but the world around them is still very, like, broken, and I think everyone in the community recognizes it, but not everyone has the ability to fix it. Not everyone has the time, the inclination, or the finances to do something. And in a way, the nun set dressing allows to get out of the way and tell the story of these students that have decided they're going to take the music class because they can easily pass it for whatever reason. But also, they all wanted to be in a music class, even if they thought it was just because it was an easy pass. Like, music is one of those things that most young people enjoy and attempt at some point in some way, shape, or form. And being able to use that as a way to talk about the very real issue of why don't we give the arts the respect, is it's really good. It's really good,
I would have to agree with you there. It's a very universal topic, music. There's music of different stripes and types, for sure, but everyone gets like the underlying reasons that we love music. And the messages it can bring across. That's probably why it's so powerful, the fact of the kids blending their culture into the traditional hymns and such.
And it's the magic of music because they go from not being able to sing and having never really sung together in any sort of like official capacity to all of a sudden they are perfectly harmonious. Musical group just based on singing La 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 a whole bunch. One thing I love about the Sister Act movies is they do that cleanup montage really well where the time passes and things have changed, but you don't know how much they've changed. Most Sister Act films use the middle of the film montage to move time along, and they do it in a really great way. I'm a big fan of we're going to clean the room and bring hope and joy by cleaning. And that is exactly what they do. They do the we're going to paint the room thing again. I love that they just have an empty choir room hanging out in this Jesuit school somewhere. And then all of a sudden, it is now the room for the kids. They've moved out of the basement and into the light. It's a little heavy-handed as a metaphor, but sometimes I like a heavy-handed metaphor. So,
Sort of like how the nuns then discovered all the awards and such and found out, oh, the school has a legacy of
I like that too. The
achievement.
yeah. So the one big sticking point of this film for people that know Catholicism is you cannot just change the type of order you are overnight, which essentially is what they do to become teaching nuns. Like all the Catholics I know that have any umbrage with this film is like, they went from one order to the other. You can't do that. And I'm thinking this is a movie about Whoopi Goldberg singing in Las Vegas and then putting on a nun's habit and then being told that she has to eat a whole bunch of like knockwurst for the next 6 months. I don't think it's supposed to be that serious. You're not supposed to look into it that much. I will say too, it's interesting that Sister Act got made into a musical. Sister Act 2 is practically already a stage musical. The fact that no one's just done Sister Act 2 yet, more Sister Act. Seems very Sister Act the musical is really good. I would love to see Sister Act 2 the musical because I think the way they position this film, it's already like 85% of the way there, to be honest.
Have they ever done, though, a sequel as a theatre production, as a musical? Oh, and what I mean about that is the fact that you've had lots of examples. As you say, the Sister Act was done. Various other things have been produced. I'm just trying to see if I could figure out if they've ever actually done almost like a sequel musical slash theater production to an existing one as
I
well.
think if Grease 2 hadn't tanked, they would have done it. Because the Grease was supposed to be a franchise of films and then TV shows. It was supposed to be the Marvel Cinematic Universe of the 70s and 80s. And Grease 2 just tanked so bad. Grease 2 just tanked so bad it didn't happen. They had a third Grease movie planned. They were going to do a mini series. It was a whole thing. And I think Grease 2, just like Sister Act 2, is distinctive enough that you could probably do a stage show and it would still work. And I never thought we were going to have a Heathers musical. So, like, anything is possible. If they can make the Heathers into a musical, they could make Sister Act. Sister Act 2 is practically, when people do Sister Act 2 YouTube videos, they remind me a lot of the way that people participate in the life of The Wiz, in which the film is so different from the stage show. Sometimes you just take the elements and you have it be as different as The Wiz is, it could still work. And I think people would still love it because, like, the Joyful Joyful thing is very iconic. The melody for his the melody and harmony for his Eyes on the Sparrow that Lauryn Hill does with I can't remember her name, but Lauryn Hill and the tall one with the short hair who's not Lauryn Hill.
Oh, I can't remember.
I can't
Sorry.
remember. I have it up. I could look it up if I had my druthers about me. But there's something about this music. Even when I used to do church, Oh Happy Day was a song that people wanted to do with the la la la's in it. Like they made a so Tanya Blount, who played Tanya, I think that's the same person, by the way, who plays the I guess she's a higher alto. I'm not really sure what she was singing at, but her complimentary harmony with Rita was fantastic. Yeah, except for Jennifer Love Hewitt, most of the kids that sang in this film went on to have singing careers, which I don't think should surprise anybody, really, to be perfectly honest.
No, and to be honest, it adds a certain element of authenticity, the fact that they got so many young, talented singers to be part of it.
Yeah, I do wonder if that was part of the casting call, because if they knew they were doing this kind of choir themed movie, you'd want kids that could sing. I mean, you have like Jennifer Love Hewitt adding color in there, obviously, but mostly the kids in the choir room actually were singers. They were not like they were not just brought in and then had a fun fact about this movie, by the way. Jennifer Lewis is in this movie in the very beginning in a blink if you miss it moment. She plays one of the singer, the backup singers in Vegas. So even Jennifer Lewis is in this film, who is now very much an icon for her gift song that she did in the past couple of years. Yeah, but Sister Act 2, they are back in the habit, and they sound really great.
Oh, you.
Thank you. Yes, I know. I worked very hard on that. I was trying to think of how many puns I could fit in where I used the word habit. One thing I love that I know you have some tradition of this in, so going back to the idea of having this kind of Catholic window dressing to get out of the way and tell the story. If you've ever been to an event where there are drag nuns that are nuns that do blessings, but they do it from a drag perspective and a queer perspective, you can kind of see that in this movie. Even though no one's wearing drag makeup, there is an aspect of performance to what Whoopi Goldberg does as Dolores, as Mary, that feels very drag. And it works for me on many different levels because I know that that is what is being done, is having this iconography so we can get out of the way to tell the real story of bringing these kids home. I like this movie is not really about Dolores. She's there to save them, but it's not really a movie about her, and it works. And of course, Whoopi says she's going to probably direct Sister Act 3 instead of starring in it, along with Tyler Perry. So it's nice that this movie, the first movie is about her. The second movie, she kind of gets out of the way once she's there, which is really nice.
Well, she's more of an agency of change, in a sense, like she's had a story herself. And now she's in a sense there to help like bring about positive change for someone else. So she's the main character, but at the same time, she's more of a catalyst as well.
Lauryn Hill's popularity after this film skyrocketed for very real reasons. Like, she's Rita is really, once they introduce Rita is really the center of this choir. Her absence is big and it's felt. Like, the Ryan Tobey's character, I'm trying to figure out if it's, I want to make sure I get the character name right, but I can't quite find it at the moment. But Ryan Tobey's character is not the lead of this film, because she just, Lauryn Hill's character Rita just pulls focus, and she really is the center of this story. And I think that's really cool. He does get his moment in the sun, so it's not a Glee thing where it's all about Lea Michele, thank goodness. They are still a choir, but it really is her story about how she chases her dream and how everyone's life is affected by her anger and disappointment and feeling very, very like affected by where she is and where she's from. And that's a very real thing, you know?
It'll be interesting to see if like she comes back in any role for Sister Act 3, or what it could realistically be, to be honest. You know, what could the plot for Sister Act 3 be?
I mean, I don't want to seem negative about it, but most Tyler Perry movies follow a formula. So if it's Whoopi and Tyler producing and directing in any capacity, it will have more of the flavor of Sister Act 2 than Sister Act 1, which I don't know if that'll be bad, because Tyler's work for me is good, but it's uneven. I just think most people think of Tyler Perry as Madea, but his work outside of playing Madea does lend itself very well to being stage work. A lot of his work, he interacts with the audience after the piece. So I tend to think of a Tyler Perry production as very interactive. And those are a lot of positives I have about the work. There are some negatives. I feel like Tyler Perry gets a little weird and slut-shamey just slightly. I think some of his elder characters are slightly unpleasant for me. I know they're supposed to be that, but like I his TV show was not my favorite TV show that's ever been done about the stuff he's made. I'm being very diplomatic, because I don't think Tyler Perry is bad by any stretch. I'm just a little nervous about him having a hand in this particular franchise. I think the franchise should be female led. I think that's maybe my thing, is that I'm happy to have Whoopi direct it, because it's her character and kind of her universe in some ways. But I do feel like this is, just based on how strong Sister Act 1 is, with most of the screenwriters and ghostwriters being female especially, I feel like this should be a female-led franchise. And I think it works better that way, because when it's a story about nuns especially, who are female presenting and female identified most of the time, I do think I'm slightly nervous about Tyler Perry for Sister Act 3, but also I'd be excited to see where it would go, you know? Because Sister Act 2 was so unexpected, I wouldn't expect Sister Act 3 to be about Lauryn Hill is now teaching music at a school. It could potentially be about the Sister Act musical as a theatrical production. And doing like a movie about a school or a community doing. So the movies are always about community. It starts with Sister Mary Clarence and it moves out, because she's such a big presence that it's always about moving out. So it could really, I think, as long as it's about moving out into the greater world and being the change you wish to see, it could be anything. Of course, Mary Wicks is dead, and Wendy McKenna can't really sing anymore, and Kathy and Jimmy is very busy. But I do think, as long as you get Kathy and Wendy on board, you could make it work. I don't think Maggie Smith would do it, because I think she sort of quit acting. I think she and Judi Dench mutually both, I know Judy especially couldn't read scripts anymore, which is why she retired. I guess Maggie would probably do it if asked, because her character in Sister Act is one of her most iconic roles. But yeah, I think as long as you're moving out in the community, you could probably do most anything with it. except for like Sister Act 3, how Sister Act got her groove back. You probably wouldn't want to like set it in Jamaica and do like a Stella thing. But maybe, I mean, I'm not going to tell him how to run a franchise. I'm excited to be surprised if it actually does happen, considering we've been talking about it since 2015 in a positive manner. People have been talking about Sister Act 3 since Sister Act 2, so it's so hard to say.
Yes. I wonder whether it go down the route of because so the first one was about her. The second one, she was a catalyst for change. The third one, will she gain some sort of semi-mythical status with a new young singer following in her footsteps, joining a modern day order of nuns to or to try and help bring them into the modern day in some
Whoopi
way?
Goldberg becomes the Pope. That would be quite a thing. I would watch that. I guess the sainthood is a real thing in Catholicism, but because she's a fake nun, I don't think you could really real saint. I guess you could technically real saint Sister Mary Clarence. Maybe it's like, maybe it's about her finding a community where there literally is. I don't know what it's called when nuns get together. It's a monastery when it's monks. So I'm gonna say monastery. It's probably wrong. I guess
Oh,
Abbey. Maybe it's Abbey. I don't know.
it's a convent.
Yeah, convent. Okay. Yes, I feel like I should know that from the movies at the very least. Maybe it's Sister Mary Wicks or Mary Wicks did make a glib thing about monks or nuns up in Vancouver that were barefoot in ice cold winter. Maybe the next one set in Vancouver where all the CW shows are filmed. Who knows?
Who knows indeed. But the main thing is that all of this really comes back to the fact of how iconic this franchise has become. That, there's discussions about doing more with it for ages and it having a runaway success in the West End with the show. I mean, heck, Whoopi came back in for a while in the show. I'm gutted that I didn't get to see her in the Sister Act West End show.
That would be hard to voice. The Mary Clarence they have in the Sister Act show, though, she has some high noted songs that I don't know that Whoopi could have hit 40 years ago when she was first the character, really. I was very impressed by the soundtrack for Sister Act the musical, though. I was very impressed. Yeah, I appreciate that though.
Yes. So the fact that they've been discussing so much, it just shows the impact. And you've given examples as well of how this film has gone on to influence in many positive ways, different cultures and different people over time. And really, isn't that the sign of, isn't that what everyone basically wants? If they're making something a work, they want to see things like this at the end of the day. These lovely positive things. If only I could have something like that in the future, I would feel absolutely happy beside myself.
It's a pretty good gold standard too, because one of Sister Mary Clarence's
That was it,
things
gold
are
standard.
gold standard, yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm happy to help, happy to assist. One thing about Sister Mary Clarence is her love of the 1960s Motown. And of course, how Motown, even though it was co-opted by white people, was really about black musicians banding together and finding their voice and being able to have something they could present to the world that people would buy. At least in a lot of ways. I don't quote me on that. I could be reading the legends of Motown completely wrong, but Motown really did feel like this was a chance for the African American voice to be heard in a pop setting. Once again, I could be wrong about that. That's very Cliff Notes and probably very incorrect. But it's interesting too because we still listen to Motown standards, and that is Mary Clarence's kind of yardstick for success. So it'll be interesting to see if Sister Act 3 also brings a revival to Motown. I don't know if it happened in with one or two, because the the 90s were really more about R&B and bringing kind of rap, especially the early 90s in. But I could see Sister Act 3 giving Motown a big renaissance, especially like Motown songs in the first two films. The finale of Sister Act 2 is the nuns and the kids singing Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which is a fairly big classic. So I'd be curious to see how Motown does after Sister Act 3 and if Motown gained any recognition from Sister Acts 1 and 2. Because I think it's very possible.
Yes, indeed. Is there any so when abouts is the third one meant to come out? Have they given any indication about that or?
No, it's still rumors,
Well.
and people have been signed on to write a script, but as anyone that works in Hollywood will tell you, that means less than nothing. Because that could change on a daily basis. Quite famously, Sister Act had like eight ghostwriters on it after the first version of the script went through. So it's hard to say. I would say I would be surprised if it's going to happen and it starts even filming this year. I'd be surprised if it wasn't like Christmas or Christmas feature 2026. I would be heavily surprised. Especially if they wanted to draft anyone, because there's a funny thing about Broadway shows. I don't know if it's the same for the West End, but if you have a show on Broadway, you can't get rights to perform the show anywhere else until it's no longer on Broadway. So, like, all of the high schools that want to do Sister Act the Musical have to wait until it's no longer on Broadway to get rights to do Sister Act the Musical in their school. Which I don't know if they would, because it's a fun show, but it's a little bit of a sexy show too. It's a little sexy, to be honest with you. I like that it's that way, but it's a little bit of a sexy show in a great way.
Yes. Interesting.
Yeah, I
Now,
don't
I
know
don't know if
if
we have we I don't even know if we have that clause, but it could very well be that I'm just not aware of it.
Yeah, it's like a Broadway rule is that if a show is on Broadway in the season, no high schools can do it because you can't get rights to a Broadway show while it's on Broadway. I don't know who is in charge of that, but it does seem like a little bit of an oversight, because people get real excited about stuff. But then again, shows I love that are a little more obscure, like Caroline or Change, I'm sure wouldn't have quite that problem.
No. So, I think I should ask, so do you have any other points you want to bring up about Sister Act 2? Any like little thoughts and such about it?
The soundtrack is great. The soundtrack is made with great intention, and I think a good soundtrack. I agree with Ben White from Parks and Rec is that a soundtrack is sort of like a love letter from the musicians of the film, I think is what he said. The Aretha Franklin version of A Deeper Love is on this. They have a version of Oh Happy Day, but it's not the one from the film. Whoopi Goldberg sings. Which is quite a thing. And they do have a 4 minute 31 second rendition of Pay Attention, which is the anthem from the classroom that gets them to the Oh Happy Day moment. It is an excellent, like, I don't just love this film because it's about nuns being silly. I love this film because the music is good. And we haven't talked much about it because most people that talk about this movie really hyper focus on the music or focus on the Christian messaging of it, because that is a real thing in it, even if we're talking about it as window dressing. So I don't talk about it that way, but there's some really great. I do think it's a very handy and accessible way to get into choral music, is this version of Oh Happy Day, because when you buy the sheet music for it actually has the la's in there. So when you do the song from Sister Act 2, you do the la la la's in there, which I think is really cool. I like that it's a big part of it. Music is joy and celebration instead of just being the solemn affair. His Eye Is on the Sparrow is the most downturn song in the whole film. And it's not even that big a downturn. It's a sorrowful moment, but it's not like cry your eyes out bad. I think there's something very special about when music is intentionally joyful, like the Sister Act franchise does. And I would hope for Sister Act 3 that, I mean, Kirk Franklin is right there and he was influenced by Sister Act 2. So if Tyler is in charge, get Franklin to help you with the music. And I think you could get, because Ryan Tobey and Tanya Blount, who sing in the choir, are both currently recording artists, and one of the part of the duo of Mary Mary was in this film as well. So like you can get Janelle Monáe in if you want. She can be the new Sister Mary Clarence. Like, I bet you Janelle Monáe would do it in a heartbeat if asked. Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens with it, but I do think it's about the joy in the music, even in the even in the hardness of this city. That's one thing about both of these films is they don't take joy in being in an urban area. Like, you don't really get the sense of like greenness and wanderlust that you would get in other films. Sister Act 2, they don't change the community quite as much, but they do get the community involved, which is a different sort of change into the community. Yeah, it's Sister Act 2. They were truly back in the habit. I don't know what to call Sister Act 3. Sister Act 3, one habit wasn't enough. I don't think that sounds very good, but I don't know what other habit pun you could use, especially for that.
I'm drawing up blanks at the second. Unfortunately, I can't be my wit is not sharp this evening.
You know, it happens sometimes. I'm so excited to be able to do podcast episodes with you, and between Zoom issues and timing issues, being able to make it work. It makes me very happy to sit with you and get to talk about things we have joy about.
Yes, you always just do little things that bring you joy. I
It's
don't think
true.
that's what that woman says. I forget what it is. Does this bring you joy? Before she chucks out your whole collection of Funko Pops.
Oh, that would make me sad. That would also be a very expensive and heavy thing to do because I have a lot of Funko Pops. Ironically, they've never done Sister Act Funko Pops. I don't know if I'd buy them, but I would love to just have a Sister Act Funko Pop collection to go next to my Hocus Pocus collection, and then just have Kathy and Jimmy be in the middle of both of those, and then one side is Sister Act and one side is Hocus Pocus. I mean, it's right there. It can't be that hard a shape to do. It's basically square. I love that. I love that though. When I become rich and famous, that'll be my first decree as I'm ruining the environment, is where are my Sister Act Funko Pops?
Oh, I'm glad to see you're using your power wisely.
I mean, I'm not at all. I'd be a terribly wonderful rich person, but then I'd also be like, I'm definitely ruining the environment. This is real bad. What do I do about it? And then someone would bring me like a chocolate covered donut from like across the world that ruined the environment, and I'd be like, ooh, donut, and then I would forget whatever I was talking about. So, Magnus, we're going to do a pop culture moment because we had a really kind of weird pop culture thing happen this week. And you were not the only person that affected, but I feel like it's something that we can talk about. And I'm going to talk about it as a consumer for half a second, but then I'm going to kind of give you the mic. I really liked what Gumroad offered in a lot of ways. And the fact that now I have several creators I cannot buy anything from, and I did not get any notice, maybe 24 hours, all being told in order to either buy stuff or now this is no longer an option. I don't like it as a consumer. I don't like it as a queer creator. I don't like it as a person that embraces not safe for work stuff. And so I just kind of want to give you the space as a creator that's used Gumroad, because I haven't used Gumroad in a very long time. But as a creator that uses Gumroad, what does it feel like for you to have this kind of taken away as an option for getting people to participate in the life of your art?
Well, John, it feels as if the rug was grabbed from under our feet, yanked, and we've gone face first into the concrete, to put it in a in a summary sort of way. Yes, the creators as well were not given any notice about this. In fact, I didn't receive an email. I found out through word of mouth through Fazto, who was kind enough to start spreading the word as soon as he found out. And we literally only had the 24-hour window. And even then, there was no set cutoff point. They just said it's going to be Saturday, the 16th of March, that this was happening. So I'm sure you saw the great deluge of story posts and emails and what have you from different creators as they were desperately trying to alert their audiences about this cutoff point and the fact that they were going to be vanishing from Gumroad. I have to say, it's probably completely killed Gumroad's reputation amongst the artistic community and probably quite a few of its buyers as well. Beforehand, I quite liked it. It was the only platform where I could put post things that people could get for free. Like not having to ask them to pay any money, I could put post stories or samples of artwork and say, hey, I know you guys want to see what I do. I'd like to give you a flavor of what I do. Here you go. And yes, there is some stuff that you can buy on my site. Please do look at it if you're interested. But here is the free stuff. And there you are. And that was great. And that worked for me and for a lot of other people as well. So for them to sort of turn around with no notice whatsoever and just cancel everything. I know they didn't do it by choice. It sounds as if PayPal, Stripe, etc. have continued their moral crusade for whatever bloody reason it is, against not safe work creators and have just decided to up the pressure on them. So they had to do this. But I feel there was ways Gumroad could have handled this better. At least send out an email to every affected creator or just send in a site-wide one. Yes, you would it'd be sent to the Safer Work creators as well, but you know, that sort of email you read, at least you're in the know about it, and it'd be very important for the not safe work creators to find out about it. Don't just have no communication whatsoever. You looked on their Twitter account, there was no mention of it. In fact, actually, Twitter, they were just being quite, they were actually bragging the day after the ban went in place and were saying, oh my God, we made over £900,000 of sales yesterday. Go team. And as you can imagine, they were savaged in the comments by pretty much everyone about this very oblivious post to the whoever run the account had made about it. But the end result is that thankfully I've diversified where people can get my content from. So I've got Patreon. I'm looking at alternatives now to replace Gumroad. I'm relatively okay. It's annoying as hell that I have to go into some to find something else, but at least I'm okay. It's not like other creators who Gumroad was their sole means of income, which is far, far worse to consider. And these poor people are now having to look for alternatives. Just for Fans is leading the charge on that. They're busy creating a new artists-only space on their website and also a new version of their shop fronts where people can sell their art and such. So that's really great. And they're doing this day on day at the moment, improving it so people can sign up for it. I'm probably going to go there myself. I probably won't be able to do free stuff from now on, sadly. I don't know if Just for Fans will allow that. So I'm not going to have exactly the same things that I did on Gumroad, but at least I'll be able to cater for the members of my audience that want to get my stuff outside of subscription models and such. But yeah, it's been another kick in the teeth to erotic artists in general. I'm not sure if you saw, but their fan box has also now turned around and said that they're no longer able to use PayPal to pay for subscriptions for their adult content users and such. So that's actually affecting users on their platform now as well. So that's another site that's gone that way. Oh, and Patreon updated its terms and conditions for not safe for work artists quietly whilst everything was happening with Gumroad. And they didn't tell anyone either. So,
That's bad.
yeah.
It's real bad. So it's this weird mix of now that the internet has been commodified and taken from the Wild West to where now we have these different sites that are heavy hitters. There's this weird thing where there's like a we have to appease, the puritanical nonsense. But the issue is that there were guardrails already in place. Like you had to actively choose to seek out not safe for work material. It wasn't like if you went on their like Twitter feed, the Gumroad was like, pushing adult stuff. It's one of those things where like you can't control people looking for the content. They will look for it, they will find it. It's kind of like when you deregulate sex work. Like people will still look for and will still find things like sex work. I know it's not quite the same, it's not one for one, but regulation helps things to be safely purchased and safely done, and just pell-mell getting rid of not safe for work or adult content is not going to make that content go away. In fact, even though I
Nope.
don't do a ton of that anymore, not anymore, but I haven't done a ton of that in a while because my theatrical stuff isn't quite as sexy as my Halloween stuff was. It started to affect my work because even if you just consider like LGBT stuff adult, if you flag that, then you flag my work, where maybe the most chaste thing in some of them is like two dudes kissing. Like where does that puritanical thing end? And it opens up a door in having PayPal be the authority. Like I have a Venmo because I have to have a Venmo. Venmo is owned by PayPal. So if Venmo decides to start doing these same things along with PayPal and Stripe, then you cut queer content creators from like the community of content creation. It doesn't mean that queer art is going to go away. It just means that we're going to have to find other means to do it. And it means that some creators that should be seen aren't going to get seen at all. That's frustrating as hell for me to watch it happen and to have it happen to you without any notice and to people without any notice, people that I was excited to buy from and now can't really do it without creating a whole bunch of other channels or hassles. Like, that's rough. And it's also like, who made you the moral arbiter of the internet? Like, especially if these, because your work is very like fantastical and very like not medieval, but I'm gonna say medieval, because there's a lot of like prince and king stuff that you've had. It's a slippery slope. And it doesn't, once you slip down, it starts to be like, what do you mean by adult content? Who's next on the list? Who are you going to deem after you've tried to erase? Because it won't erase us. That's the thing, is that the wackiest, hardest truth is that the Pandora's box is open and gay people are out. By getting rid of the work, you don't erase gay people. It just gives people less community and makes them lonelier. It just creates places in the darker parts of the web that then get to handle that. And kids not being able to learn about consent, or kids thinking gay porn is the be all end all of what, queer sex is. Like that just it's so frustrating because, queer fantasy is very important. Having like gay king falls in love with gay king, gay queen falls in love with gay queen. That's great and that's very important because there's not a lot of that historically in our work that's not shameful and that doesn't end with the death of one of the characters. And there shouldn't be a problem with being able to show a peen on the internet as long as the person viewing it is of age and consents to view it. Like, I don't, I'm very frustrated on your behalf and as a creator and as a consumer that this happens, and it feels powerless, and it feels like an attempt to erase us. And I don't like that. Because I fought
No.
very long and hard to not be erased, and I don't want to be erased. And also, you just can't. The Pandora's box is open. We are here. We're queer. You have to, there's nothing you can do about it, you know, because there's always going to be queerness. That hell, the X-Men is built on queerness. All of the people celebrating X-Men 97 that has just come out, I wonder how many of them agree with this decision. You know, how many of them look for, you know, X-Men content and don't realize how incredibly gay X-Men is. You don't have to like subscribe to Rosiff's really great 80s pop X-Men queer stuff, but like the X-Men are queer. They really are. There was a great video I saw about somebody that had like a Gambit statue and was like, "You don't think he's queer? You think he's queer because he wore a crop top in the first episode? No, this dude's been queer since the 60s, and here's all the reasons why." I also always forget that his skin color is supposed to naturally be that pink. Like, I don't think Gambit is wearing a shirt. I think like his like chest torso underneath the trench coat is actually just supposed to be his skin. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure Gambit's natural hue is like pink and bisexual pink lighting, you know. I could be wrong about that, but I'm 90% sure that Gambit's whole like torso is supposed to be that pink.
Yes. Well, maybe we can do an investigation about that at some point
I would
to figure
enjoy
out
that.
exactly if it if he is wearing a shirt or not wearing a shirt.
I would enjoy that very much. No, yeah, I just wanted to give space and do, it's been more than a minute. We're calling it the pop culture minute, but it's going to be more than a minute. I just wanted to give space to like let you be able to talk about that from your side as a creator and for people on the podcast just hearing about it. Yes, it's a thing that has happened before and it will probably sadly happen again, but the more you know about it, the more you look out for it, the more you'll see in public spaces when queerness is erased. The queerness doesn't go away. It's just erased from that place. And even then, it's not erased because there's always going to be inherently queer stuff. Like, you can't escape the queerness. We're already here. We're already in entertainment. There's nothing you can do about it. I know that's vaguely threatening, but that's kind of how I feel about the whole issue. I feel like I have to be vaguely threatening and remind you, queerness is always here. And even if it assimilates, there will always be a way in which queerness is here, which is part of what this podcast is for.
Indeed. Yes.
Well, thank you for that rather somber and sad pop culture moment in a way, but I thought it was really important to address. And yeah.
No, you are right. It's quite important thing for probably quite a few of our listeners. So yes, it was right to give it some airtime, shall we say. And hopefully some good alternatives do appear. And we could just let Gumroad become the new Tumblr, basically.
Yeah, but Tumblr lost so much. Tumblr lost so much they started allowing adult material back on the site, but now it's ruined. I don't
Pretty
know what it
much.
looks like now, but it is a ruinous way when you tell the gays you're not welcome. That is a ruinous day for your arts. But all gays are welcome here, and all gays are welcome to enjoy the pop culture. I want to thank you for being part of the April celebration of John. This month's theme I chose was non-traditional coming of age stories, and I think Sister Act 2 is a fantastic coming of age story. And I think it's a very special movie, and I'm so glad in syndication people really discovered it. People discovered it in the movie theater, but it didn't make as much money as the first one, which is why the third one probably wasn't greenlit right away. And also, those habits are very tight. So Whoopi Goldberg probably didn't want to have to wear a habit for a third time in 3 years. Of course, I can't speak for Whoopi, but that's my thought process.
Yes. But no, it's great to be doing this month with you, John, and I'll look forward to our next subject.
I look forward to it too, and I look forward to all of you listeners joining us next time on Everything is Gay, even the straight. Bye.
Farewell.